Okay.
Yes, cool.
Okay.
Should we wait with
what?
I know, isn't that true? That is a big door.
And that's only the beginning of the story.
What?
Yeah, absolutely.
He should speak at maybe City Field or something.
Right? Or he should play there or something. Okay. Yeah. Tomorrow we'll continue with Miun and Islandis. But for today, I thought we'd give everybody one more day just to get back on top of the Makoros. So we would continue with our Reb Chaim assessment, I guess, is a good way to say it. So it goes without saying that, again, we're moving actually very quickly through these topics. Each one really is a topic in its own right, and there's really a lot more to pull out from each and every one. So I'm just going through, as I said I would, a few examples of different types of, I guess, contributions which highlight Reb Chaim's contribution or his expansion of Derech HaLimud. And what I'm trying to do, what I've been trying to do, is to take examples where his solution contrasts very sharply in a way which characterizes his special methodology and approach, or, as I said, I think even more intriguing and more fruitful in a certain methodological way is even to take the examples where there's a greater overlap and parallel, because then I think the differences are even more significant, subtler, but way more, I guess, characteristic. And that's what we've been trying to do in order to, it's easy to say that, well, I don't know if it's easy to say that, but once you've said it, it's easy to say it. And then the question is, like, is that really true? So that's why we've spent a number of weeks just running through, some issues. Although, Ma'isim Shebechol Yom, I think, in the context of sugyas all the time, we see not just Reb Chaim, other Darkei HaLimud as well, the contributions of Rishonim and of Achronim. But, when you put, when you juxtapose treatments of a topic, right, it really just highlights how amazingly rich and varied, and like that in itself is just a very inspirational thing, the different perspectives on particular topics are, and in some cases they reflect broader tendencies in Talmud Torah. Okay, so for example, our discussion of, again, the Nikiyum in the context of Yomos, where we, spent a lot of time contrasting Reb Chaim's perspectives with that of the Or Sameach, those of the Or Sameach and the Minchas Chinuch and others, and of course, earlier the Rishonim highlight this, and many other examples of it as well. So what we've been doing is trying to show cases where there's a stronger parallel in order to highlight, I guess, the greater subtlety in some cases, or at least the inner logic, halachic reality aspects of Reb Chaim's approach. So I think the last two ones that we did were the Minchas Chinuch and Reb Chaim on Tashvisu, and Beis Halevi, Minchas Chinuch and Reb Chaim on Kedusha Sa'art. I wanted to say a few more words about them because I was rushing. Each one of these, obviously, you could talk about for several hours without difficulty. We're trying to get a number of them in, so we're moving a little more quickly. The idea with the Minchas Chinuch wasn't simply to show the overlap and therefore the contrast, but also to show that there are certain simanim that really highlight the different perspective in the particular topic and probably in a broader way as well. So, for example, again, Minchas Chinuch's discussion about Kumba Seishev Al Tasa when it comes to Tashbisu, or Reb Chaim's parallel discussion about a Kiyum Begabra or a Kiyum Bechapza, I think one of the things I was trying to highlight was that for the Minchas Chinuch, while he addresses it, and then in some cases this could just be a coincidence, it doesn't have to work out this way because there are all sorts of factors, but in this particular case I think it just ended up being very characteristic, that for Minchas Chinuch, Machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether Sreifas, whether Tashbisus was Sreifa or Bekal Davar, right, that kind of he considered that and mostly dismissed it as being, the Machlokas. Instead, he opted for Lifnei and La'achar, Zmanisuro, being like the linchpin Machlokas. Whereas Reb Chaim, went exactly the opposite way. Sreifa, probably much more so even than the Kodem Tzmana Yisur Lachar Tzmana Yisuro, is the issue. And again, because in one case you're talking about the question of initiative and passivity, that's in Cheskinov's perspective. Is it a Kumbase? Is it an Isurase? So Kodem Lachar Tzmana Yisuro is critical because for him, Kodem Tzmana Yisuro can only apply when it's really Tzman Yisuro. In other words, if you take a Sheval Tasa or an Isurase perspective, so then what looks like a Kodem Tzmana Yisuro can actually be Mitzumtzum as Tzman Yisuro. As opposed to if you require Kumbase, then you can never do that, in advance. So for him, that was the perfect, pivot in the topic. That's really the issue, and everything else, flows from that. Whereas for Chaim, that isn't the question, even though, again, there's a lot of overlap. The question is whether or not you're doing something transformative and therefore relating in a different way to the Chametz, right? Or you're just making sure you don't have it in your Rishus and you're getting rid of it. So it's, Kodem and Akar Yisuro may figure into that, but for him, the fact that you have a method of getting rid of it, specific method, and especially Sreifa, which really is, makes a statement and, relates to the Chafza, is far more important. So again, by the same token, the Minchas Kinuch's other issues, I'm not saying that some of them wouldn't be also Nafkamina, but, for him, the question of, could you have to buy the chametz, which is an initiative question. What happens if somebody, steals your mitzvah, in advance? Is he taking away everything, or is he doing the job for you and, at least gets a half a yashar koach? Things like, mitzvah habav, you do this with mitzvah habav avera. Those are all very critical issues. We went through some of them last time, before Pesach, the Minchas Chinuch, whereas for Reb Chaim, like Nasas Mitzvah, so is like the perfect example. And therefore, even where you have the overlap, which is Lava Nitha Klas A, right, they're both trying to answer the question, how can the Rambam ignores the reasoning of Lava Nitha Klas A to explain that there's no Malkus, so each one is using this issue to solve that problem. But again, you end up with a very different perspective. Like, does Lava Nitha Klas A depend on Kumbase and Sheval Tasa? Or does it depend on there being a kiyum in the chafza, or a maisa hagavra, or a chobas hagavra, etc. And in some respects, those end up being not only very different in applying the common nita klase forward in other cases, in some senses, maybe even, I wouldn't say opposites, but certainly in some cases will be opposites as well. So, this is a good kind of model, for analyzing other examples like that, where, again, you seemingly have parallels, but, on closer examination, there's a different emphasis, albeit a seemingly subtle different emphasis about what the main nekuda is, and how that affects, what's the linchpin case, what are the main nafkamina, and, as I say, even where you have overlapping either nafkaminas or issues, how that's going to end up affecting things in a different way. And in a similar way, when you have like the same yesod, but it's taken a step further, like the Ritva Zedi Kiyum and Reb Chaim's expansion of it, in terms of, Kind and Sudar and Das and Katan and things of that sort, whereas the Ritva, is the one definitely who develops the yesod, in Kiddushin, but primarily in terms of Machori Ageder, in terms of the Shein Eid. Similarly, again, Reb Chaim was very partial to certain other like major Shitas Rishonim, which he for some reason didn't quote. Again, I don't know if he didn't know them. Probably it's Yesh V'Yesh V'Yesh. It's hard to know. But for example, Reb Chaim's famous discussion, maybe we'll do this another time, or we'll do it next year actually. We'll do it for next year. Okay, we'll do it next year. Reb Chaim's discussion of Shibud Karkos, for example, and English Voimal Kfiras Shibud Karkos, which is a Bav Metzia topic, is very much, Reb Chaim speaks about that in Hilchos Ishus, and again in Hilchos Shavuos, and develops, the idea that for the Rambam, Rambam clearly earlier, the Rimigash, did not have the typical Balei Tosfos view of English Voimal Kfiras Shibud Karkos, that anytime you take a Shavua, where there's a shibud that is connected to the Din Torah, why don't you say that there's no shvua because ein nishbayim ala karkos? And like down the road, there's a possibility that this affects shibud karkos, so it should be ein nishbayim ala karkos. So this is a question the Balei Tosfos ask in Bava Metzia and in Shvuos and Ksuvos. The Rambam just seemed to agree migash earlier, and then the Rambam later seemed to have a different perspective on when you apply that idea. So Rav Chaim's treatment of that topic in Hilchos Ishus and Hilchos Shvuos very much parallels the Ramban's, yesod that he develops in the fifth parak of Shavuos. But if you look very closely, there are some differences in formulation or an expansion of it. And again, it's a very good example. Or, again, we could talk about other cases. The difference between Shibud HaGuf and Shibud HaChasim, which is very, in the Rishonim, associated with Rabbeinu Tam, on the notion of Mechiras Chovos, Doraisa Drabanan. So again, in that those same pieces, when Rav Chaim speaks about Shibudim, like he borrows some of that, even terminology, but, applies it in a slightly different way. So it's very fascinating, like, to do these overlapping comparisons. Rav Chaim is the famous piece about Pia Shmua more, although part of it is in the newly, the Shiurim and Bava Metzia, but on the difference, to explain the Rambam's famous Shita about Baal Avimo in Shomrim. The Rambam asks some very famous questions. Rambam Nechoschiris, Perek Beis Halacha Gimel, says that, Poshea is Kemazik on the one hand. On the other hand, there seems to be a Ptur of Baal Avimo. And Rambam asks some questions on that. So Reb Chaim's answer, with the Baal Avimo is Afgas Shmira, is very similar to the answer that was given much, much earlier by the Shach. In Kosh Mishpat. Again, Reb Chaim doesn't quote it. I don't know if he didn't quote it, didn't know it, or didn't know it when he was saying it, or he thought it was different. But again, the differences in formulation, speak not only of the overlap, once again, but also of the, differences in application and in understanding. And that is true very much as well, for a bunch of other topics. The second one that we discussed last time was the Beis Halevi's perspective on Kedushas Haaretz. I want to say something again further about that as well, because we were running. We should explain that oftentimes, even where Beis Halevi, has made a breakthrough, so, that's again part of the inspiration of Talmud Torah, and the progress in Talmud Torah. So, one Kiddush or one perspective, leads to an expansion, and then maybe an additional chiddush or a different direction, etc. So Beis Halevi's idea of Kedushas Haaretz being a factor that affects, but it's also separate from simply the question whether certain dinim are d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, because of Yesh Kinanakam Mavgiya, again, I'm assuming everybody remembers the basic idea, is a great example, I think, where Reb Chaim used that yisod and just took it a significant step further. Again, we talked about Kinu Yistira being a very similar idea, making it more formalized in terms of more innerly, coherent, and taking it further. The example of Kedushas Haaretz in particular, I think, really highlights some of these differences in that, once you have this distinction between Dinim Drabanan and Kedushas Haaretz Drabanan, so again, Beis Halevi was satisfied, to distinguish between different factors that determine Drabanan, in a very self-evident way. Namely, if you hold Kedusha Shnia, Kitshal Shaita, the low Kitshal Yasid Labo, so then Kedusha Haaretz is Batel. And if you hold Kedusha Shnia, Kitshal Shaita, the Kitshal Yasid Labo, what that really means is that this Kedusha Haaretz. And if there's some other factor that dictates that the Tribus of Isis or Chala or Shmita or whatever it's going to be is Rabbanon, once you've said Kedusha Shnia, Kitshal Shaita, the Kitshal Yasid Labo's words, and that concept of Kitshal Yasid Labo, you obviously, I'm reconstructing, but I think fairly, you obviously have to be talking with some sort of other factor, some extraneous factor, some factor which is a tznai in the chiyuv of, let's say, Shmita, or Trumos, or Chala, etc., but which has nothing to do with Kedushas Haaretz, because both the phrase And the idea of Kedusha Shnia, you know, either being Kitchel Yasid Lava or Kitchel Shaita, seems to be addressing that issue. So again, when Reb Chaim takes it further and says that Bias Kulchem, that's what we talked about last time a little bit, is itself a condition in Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, that's, you know, building off of, clearly, you know, the larger principle that there can be two different types of dinim, but it's taking, you know, a significant extension of that notion, right? Saying that, you know, there are other factors in Kedushas Eretz beyond the phrase and the issue of Kedusha Shnia being Betela or not. And again, it's not obvious when you first think about it that Bias Kolchem would have anything to do with Kedushas Hakarka, right? It seems like it is just a condition in certain chiyuvim. After all, Bias Kolchem refers to how Klal Yisrael related to, rather than any objective condition, you know, connected with the actual Kedushas Hakarka. So this is a very subtle, you know, notion of Kedushas Haaretz. Again, it bespeaks again of a kind of halachic reality approach in that, since it isn't obvious and direct, so the idea that this somehow, you know, Kedushas Haaretz can be affected by Bias Kol, that's very much a chalos, you know, kind of halacha. Again, partly where he got it from, his reading of the Gemara in Ksuvas Afchafalet, that Bias Kolchem has to be, or at least the contrast between Bias Kolchem having to be present at the beginning of the initiation of that, you know, tkufa of Kedushas Haaretz, as opposed to Kol Yoshve Aleha of Yovel, is again a very good example of, you know, number one, you know, being like aware, you know, of everything surrounding the topic, and you know, being inspired again to understand all the chilukim. But again, this idea that initiation, you know, or the initiation period has to be a kedushas haaretz halakha. It can't just be a tnai in the kiyum of that particular mitzvah or chiyuv halakha. Because why wouldn't that wax and wane if it's just a condition? Again, I don't think that there aren't other ways to explain it. But again, just reconstructing. So on the one hand, you have the situation where the language, and the more obvious, you know, breakdown, you know, makes perfect sense the way the Beis Halevi, you know, presented it. On the other hand, if you're looking for more, I guess, subtle clues, and you want to understand the global and total topic, like you want to understand how come, you know, Dine Yovel are differ from Dine, you know, Chala, or Trumos, or possibly Maestros, or maybe even Shvita, so then, you know, if you're bothered by those, like this larger questions of the total system, and you see the system as not just discrete dinim, even if you have the emphasis, and that's the irony of, you know, davar mesuyam, let's say. But, you know, before you get to concluding that something is a davar mesuyam, and even if you have a, like an inclination or a predisposition to say things are, oh, that's a special din, right, but the special din, you know, also fits in, like, to the larger picture. So the sensitivity to what's going on around you, because there's no kasha internally in Bias Kolchem, it's just the contrast to Kol Yoshve Aleha, right, which makes this an issue and which makes it a problem. But at the end of the day, what emerges, what you have to end up thinking is possible, and definitely what emerges is that in addition to taking this factor, which isn't so obvious, and where you have to overcome a little bit the counter pressure of the, you know, both logically and textually, and say something not, you know, not so obvious, is that you also have to end up feeling comfortable with the notion that you could have different levels of Kedusha Sa'aretz for different dinim. That too is a very subtle idea. That's where, you know, ironically again, you know, davar mesuyam, I guess, factor. Oh, this is a separate kalal, so this is a separate din. On the one hand, like, you're motivated in the same piece, you know, by the contrast, let's say, to Yovel. On the other hand, you know, it doesn't limit you from coming to a conclusion in which you're saying, well, Bias Kulchem is a din in Kedushas Haaretz, and yet it doesn't apply to all applications which are contingent upon Kedushas Ha'aretz. So, according to Dina de Gemara, and say Shita Saraydin and most Rishonim, say it's only Chala. And according to the Rambam, right, it conceivably would have been a Chala, you know, in Truma, but maybe yearly only, which extends it to the Maestras. And while he's extending it, Rabbi Chaim, in part of his explanation, also to Shemitah, based on Psukim. But the point is, again, Nechas Chinuch, just to contrast it again, you know, always says, oh, B.S. Kulkan doesn't apply wherever you don't find it, but because it's not a Dinei Kedushas Haaretz, it's just a requirement of B.S. Kulkan. You know. So for Rabbi Chaim, on the one hand, he's expanding it, like to places, you know, that it's like Shemitah. There's no evidence in the Gemara. He's just assuming you can expand it. On the other hand, he has to be comfortable saying that although this is a din in Kedushas Haaretz, the, you know, requirements of Kedushas Haaretz for A, for B, and for C might be different. Or, maybe another way to say that, this is what I was suggesting, is that there are different levels of Kedushas Haaretz, right? And that you need Kedushas Haaretz Shlema, you know, for certain dinim, and, you know, some Kedushas Haaretz, or Kedushas Haaretz, is sufficient for other dinim. But, in a way, that is like, again, with the coming together of the, I guess, the global perspective which produces, you know, the insight, and carries it forward on the one hand, and then, you know, the comfort level with, you know, how far do you want to apply it, either in terms of evidence, or even in terms, or in some cases, in terms of inclination. But I think this also allows, you know, us to go further, or people post Reb Chaim to go further with it. And that is, you know, both on a hashkafic level and also, again, just continuing with the analysis. On a hashkafic level, in terms of, you know, what really are the implications, let's say, between you know, things that have to do with Karka Shel Eretz Yisrael in a more objective way, and the way that Klal Yisrael, let's say, related to their opportunity, let's say, to live in Eretz Yisrael. Right? I mean, the idea of Bias Kochem as a precondition is fascinating in its own right. The idea that it would be connected with actual Kedushas Haaretz, Kedushas Karka, is just, you know, a really fascinating notion about the relationship between Kedushas Ha'am and Kedushas Haaretz, and again, historical, you know, seizing historical opportunity, capitalizing on historical opportunity as a dimension in the objective Kedushas Haaretz. That's just an amazing. Again, as far as I know, Reb Chaim doesn't speak about that. I like to speak about that. I think it makes sense. I don't think that's a drasha anymore. I think if you're convinced of the evidence that Bias Kulchem affects Kedushas Karka, then this becomes a halachic factor. Again, you have to be careful what you do with it, you know, how much you do with it, but I think there are implications, hashkafically, in understanding things and maybe even beyond. Moreover, again, for me, I haven't seen it elsewhere, the idea that, you know, Bias Kulchem is a din in Kedushas Haaretz, and yet it doesn't apply, you know, across the board necessarily, right? Which means that there is really a different hagdara for different things, or that there are different levels of Kedushas Haaretz, and the different levels, right, are required to a different extent in different dinim. Right, to me, was something that opened up, you know, the Rambam's, you know, if it's true, in other words, opens up the Rambam's, you know, organization of this topic in a way that is potentially very paradigmatic. So let me explain what I mean by that very quickly. I said it last time, but I just want to stand a little more on it. Namely, if you really believe that Bias Kulchem affects Kedushas Haaretz, so then the fact that it is omitted from Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Vav, where the Rambam speaks about Kedushas Haaretz and Kedushas Yerushalayim, and Paskin's Kedushas Shniyah Kitchen Yasid Lavo, and from the beginning of Hilchos Trumos, Perek Aleph, you know, Halakha Aleph through Vav or so, where again he goes through these dinim and leaves you the impression that Kedushas Haaretz, his manenu, is Shlema, and then drops that, you know, oh, by the way, you know, Bias Kochem isn't just a din in Chala in Hilchos Bikurim, but it's also a din in Hilchos Trumos and Maestros, as the last two halachos, you know, Chatei and Chavav or so, in Perek Aleph, is just remarkable. Because, again, assuming that the Rambam is and this was, you know, this is not an assumption, this is self-evident, that the
Rambam's
organizational skills are just unparalleled. So the choice, right, to leave this out of Hilchos Bechira, basically the Rambam has intentionally, you know, I don't say misled, I will use the word misled to be dramatic,
temporarily,
right, but obviously his intention isn't to mislead us. It's he's represented it this way intentionally, right? He's left us with the impression intentionally that as far as Kedusha Saharitz is concerned, that decision was determined by Kedusha Shnei Kitchel Shaitz Kitchel Yosid Labo, which he paskins like. And that's the impression that you walk away with when you finish Hilchos Beis HaBechira Perek Mam, and when you read Perek Aleph Hilchos Trumos until you get to the last two halachos. Now, why would he do that? What does he gain by that? Or another way to say it would be, a less ambitious way would say, how could he do that? Why does he do it? You know, this is already the next stage, I guess, beyond that. So what does he want to accomplish with this? But if, you know, putting all the pieces together, we really do conclude that, you know, there is Kedushas Haaretz L'inyan Zeh V'lo L'inyan Zeh, or there's Kedushas Haaretz Shleima and Bilti Shleima, and so on, then, you know, what the Rambam does, you know, is really calibrated, you know, perfectly. Because he doesn't want you to know right away that B.S. Kulchem affects Trumas Meisras Kala, because then you'll think that, you know, Kedusha Shnia could have been, fully effective, but it never was. It was, like, you know, stillborn. It was aborted, you know, from the very beginning. He doesn't want you to give that impression, because that's not true. And it is, you know, selectively fully applicable, or if you want to say it the other way, right, there is mitzvahs kedushas haaretz. For example, again, what are you going to say for the Rambam, let's say in light of the Beis Halevi, about kinyan akum baki? If you read the Rambam in Perek Aleph, Hilchos Trumos, you definitely get the impression that ein kinyan akum mafkia mikedushas haaretz, except for Syria, right? Now, the question is, if he really holds that Bias Kolchem is a sufficient, you know, hit on Kedushas or sufficient deficiency in Kedushas Haaretz, again, following the Beis Halevi's line of reasoning, right, that would be like an inaccurate psak, you know, given the reality. And it's not like that changed in Egypt, you know, sometime between, you know, the year 400 and 1200 or 1250. You know, this is, there was no B.S. Kolchem from the beginning of Ezra.
Right.
So, what's that all about? But if the analysis is correct, then, this is my reading of it again. Then, what the Rambam is saying is, again, I think I mentioned that the Rav used to say that if you put together the Beis Halevi and Rav Chaim, you might not have not a rejection, but a justification of the Hetzer Mechira. Because the sort of the Hetzer Mechira was based on Yeshkin and Akum Lafkiya, right, because Bismanenu, Shemitah Drabanan, is comparable to Surya. And that was what the Beis Halevi was challenging. But the Beis Halevi was challenging it, right, depending on why Shemitah Bismanazeh is Drabanan. But if you point to Rav Chaim, it's Drabanan because of B.S. Kulchem, and B.S. Kulchem is a Risarni, Kedushas Haaretz. So then on the contrary, you might, you know, ironically, be justifying rather than rejecting. Now, I'm not interested in rejecting. I'd prefer to justify the Hetzer Mechira. But all I'm saying is, it's not so obvious to me. And if you read the Rambam's view on Yesh Kinyan Akum Lafkia, it's just not obvious that he really thinks that, you know, in his time, that there was Yesh Kinyan Lafkia outside of Syria. And in light of this whole analysis, you can understand why that's not clear. And maybe it's not true, if you were to accept this perspective. But what it does, in addition to everything else, is I think it highlights something, again, soul analysis, just to show you how things can, if you're convinced of it, how things can affect other things. It affects our perspective on the Rambam. Right? It's mostly we've been talking about Reb Chaim's contribution, but you can't talk about, you know, one contribution without, you know, always reassessing or, you know, reappraising the entire system. So this is an example, and we've had many in our travels, which I always like to quote to highlight, you know, that the Rambam is not a sefer of halacha l'maisa. Okay, not that there's anything wrong with Svarim of Halakha Maisa, but it just isn't. So there's a very, you know, interesting, again, tension in the Rambam. On the one hand, the Rambam, you know, is relating to Halakha of Kol HaTorah Kula, right? It's the total presentation of all Torah Shebetzav / Torah Shebaal Peh, all of the Halakha, including the parts that are not applicable, unfortunately, is Manenu, right, the Kudshim and the Taros and the parts of Zeroyim, you know, and so on. So it's, as we know, more comprehensive than other, you know, legal codes. That was part of the greatness of what the Rambam did. And the question is what motivated that. So you could have said, well, it wasn't, that doesn't reflect that this isn't primarily a halakha l'maisa work. It just means that, you know, the Rambam is an optimist and is an idealist, you know, was paskening halakha l'maisa, you know, not only for, you know, Egypt, you know, in the Middle Ages, in Middle Ages, but, you know, dore doros, you know, from earlier times, and, you know, Mirz Hashem, you know, going forward. It doesn't prove it's not a halakha l'maisa work, it proves it's a, you know, super halakha l'maisa work. It's a, you know, halakha l'maisa work for all time. I think to some extent that's absolutely true. But I think what's fascinating about the Rambam in general, is highlighted by, I think, you know, these two phenomena. That is that sometimes the Rambam's organization, which can never be a flaw in his aptitude of organization, because, you know, as I say, you know, he more than proved himself, never mind equal to the task, but just better than anybody else. Right? Without a computer, without anything, you know, without time, without a computer, like he just, you know, reorganized everything, and his structure is just, you know, the word magnificent in this case just doesn't, you know, doesn't even do it justice. So that he was, you know, that his organizational aptitude was just extraordinary, you know, it goes without saying. So these forays into, like, intentional delays and et cetera, you know, then become, you know, much more salient, right? Why is he doing this? Why would he want you to walk away from Hilkos? So basically the Rambam is making a choice. And then, like any other presentation, you know, when people make a choice, you know, there can be many reasons, but especially when there's a pattern to their choices, it often highlights, you know, primary purpose, secondary purpose, you know, etc. And that's really what I want to suggest to you. Meaning, if it's okay for the Rambam for you to walk away from his two major presentations in Yad HaChazaka, Hilkos Beis HaBechira and Hilkos Trumos, and be momentarily confused, right, or even misled, whether or not, you know, Kedushas, whether or not Trumas HaMaisers Bizmanenu is Doraisa or Drabanan, heck, maybe Lechumra misled, you know, rather than Lechula misled. Maybe you don't want to take that chance. But if that's okay, so what's the payoff, right? So what I'm suggesting the payoff is conceptual acuity, conceptual purity is the payoff, right? By waiting till the end of Hilkos Trumos, by omitting this from Hilkos Beis HaBechira, right, he is able to accomplish something that he considers to be important. That is to give you accurate conceptual and actual information that you should know. We really do paskin Kedusha Shnia Kitcha L'Shaita V'Kitcha L'Asid Lavo, and that's important for understanding Kedusha Sa'aretz and some of its dimensions exist in Zman HaZeh. And yet, L'Maisa, this is even without Reb Chaim, L'Maisa, forget about Reb Chaim for the moment, right, L'Maisa, the key of Trumas U'Maisros, never mind Chala, Bizman HaZeh, is only Drabanan. Right? Those are the facts, nothing to do with the analysis of Reb Chaim. It's like, what? I mean, and if I stopped learning, you know, for, you know, Hilkos Trumos, or I was learning Hilkos Bechira and it took a while, you know, so I just would be, you know, misinformed. Like, so what's the point of that? Right. So again, if you're primarily writing a Sefer of Halakha L'Maisa, you just can't do that. You have to rewrite, and it's not like the Rambam never writes this. If he never wrote it, you could say, you know, it's somehow it, you know, disrupts these, you know, the structure or the continuity, you know, but it's not like he never writes, you know, can it be our new or, you know, see what we wrote. So make a reference. Rambam has plenty of references. So say, you know, although it's Drabanan, as we'll explain. But he doesn't. Right. So then I think we have to ask ourselves the question, is the Rambam's inclusion of Kol HaTorah Kula right, just a halacha lemaisa plus or idealistic halacha lemaisa? Or is it an indication that his real goal in the Shatara, although it certainly is also to paskin Shas, but primarily is to present Shas, you know, the hakra of Shas. And that's really what he says in his Hagdama. Right? He doesn't say this is, you know, a sefer halacha lemaisa. He says this is a sefer which includes Kol HaTorah Kula. That's why we call it, you know, Mishnah Torah. And if you know this book, you know, you have a, you know, in your hands you have, you know, Kol HaTorah Kula, Torah Shel Peh. So let me just highlight this different way. First of all, it's not the only example of this. We have it all the time. But the Rambam says things in different places and implies different emphases. And we try to explain that based on, oh, in this context, or he means it based on this framework, etc. Why does he put, you know, Matzu B'Shoso, you know, and Sota, and, you know, Kadesha, you know, where he puts them? You know, he should have put them in Yisurei Bia, right? Not in Hilchos Ishus or in Hilchos Geirushin, or in Hilchos Yibum, you know, as the case may be. So again, if it's pure halakha lemaisa organization and structure, right, you would make a different choice. So it doesn't mean he doesn't have that goal as well, but the primary goal is to accurately represent, you know, Kol HaTorah Kula, and to use organization and structure, right, as a powerful tool, right, to create different impressions. But I think it's another aspect of this which I think it explains. It's occurred to me many times. Whenever you go through, you know, on the Chag, it's always good to go through the Rambam, you know, on the Chag, and, you know, and then to go through the Tur and Shulchan Aruch, if you can. It takes a long time, too, but just, you know, even before you get to the later Achorim, just to get, like, an impression. So what's fascinating about the Rambam is, the Rambam, on the one hand, again, has every din of Kachim, Taurus, and Zerayim in it, and at the same time, he felt absolutely no need, and I'm not sure if other people make this point or not so much, he felt absolutely no need to update, halacha lemaisa-wise, right, the issues that are even germane. Right? In other words, like what's going on for the last, 400 or 500 years. He does now and then, he'll tell you what's going on in Eretz Shinar and in Sfarad and whatever. Now and then, he'll tell you, but it's very rare. Certainly, in terms of issues, if you take Chubas Rambam, so we know the Rambam was very involved in, all sorts of issues. Right? But you don't have the Psakim of Chubas Rambam, we're talking about contemporary applications, let's say, of Halakha. You don't have them, by and large, again, with some rare exceptions. He's not relating to them in Yad HaChazaka. Even though he's paskening them, and he's involved with them. He knows what's going on with the Gaonim. Here and there, you'll get stuff from the Gaonim, and you'll get the Rambam. I'm not saying it's never. But you don't, just contrast it. You know, take what's in Chuvas Rambam, see how much of it, you know, is not in Yad HaChazaka. Or, another way to say this, just take any area of Halacha, and compare the Rambam and the Torah. Take Hilchos Chametz, right, I was going through. So you look at the Torah and Shulchan Aruch, there's so much extra updated material, you know, about the ovens and the, you know, Arbiz Manenu ovens and, you know, and this Pashtita and Ashtita and, you know, this kind of food and that kind of food, this is. You know, I'm not saying you have nothing in the Rambam, but you have nothing comparable in the Rambam. The scope of Torah and Shulchan Aruch in updating since, the time of the Gemara is just much greater than the Rambam's even updates of the Gaon. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Again, you can't ignore it. It's never a problem if you relate to something, because he also meant it as a code, for sure. But the primary focus of the Rambam is to present accurately, conceptually accurately, and the halacha lemaisa psakim of Shas, of the received tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh, not primarily, right, to be a handbook, you know, how to go through life, you know, as a proper halachic Jew. That also to the extent, but for that there are tshuvas, and for that there are other handbooks, etc. How do we get onto that? So my point is that once you understand, you know, but that seems to be true, so then, you know, make organizational decisions like the ones that we're talking about, become much more understandable. Because while you would prefer not to leave anybody even with temporary misinformation, right, you for sure, you know, have to make decisions where you're trying to write a code, which is anyways enormous and comprehensive, but you have to draw the line somewhere. Sometimes you have to draw the line in updating. Sometimes you have to draw the line in terms of, you know, bulkiness. You can't have something in three different places or four different places, usually. So when forced to decide between conceptual purity, let's say, and, you know, practical handbook effectiveness, the Rambam often, I would say usually, you know, sides with, you know, with the first. And the reason is because that's what he says in his Hakdamah, that's what the purpose of Yad HaZaka is. But that is highlighted even more once you've learned the sugyas and have an appreciation based on the Achronim, we're talking about Chaim in particular, but once you understand the Lamdas and the topics and then you see it in a consistent way in the Rishonim, so, you know, what I'm trying to show is that, you know, it isn't just what does the particular authority say, it's also the continuation of Torah Shebaal Peh, I guess, which you know, results from it. We're in the period now, of course, of the countdown, reflected by Sfiras Omer, at least in the Sefer Achinuch's understanding of it, you know, between Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim, or Zipat Yetzias Mitzrayim, Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Kabbalah Satorah. And this idea that, you know, we're not just treading water, we're not just passive transmitters, you know, but that Torah is an ongoing, you know, concern, that it continues, you know, HaMechadesh, you know, Betubo, you know, Kol Yom Ma'aseh Bereishis refers also to the chain of the Masorah. And it's based on a past and a transmission, which is, you know, painstaking in its, you know, care and accuracy and so on. But that, you know, as you go forward, and you do that, and you juxtapose different things, or you think about them, you also just gain new insights, and new insights ripple into other new insights. And study of Darkei HaLimud, and appreciating, you know, an advance, and then, like, you know, reassessing in light of that advance other issues and other things, I'm trying to highlight that today, is an example of that as well. What I want to do next time is, I want to pick an example which a number of you mentioned, and I had it on my list, of course, as well, because it's a very good one. And that is an example where you have almost uncannily, like a similar or same solution to a problem. But again, one, in the case of Reb Chaim, which highlights, you know, his unique approach. And that is I just want to give at least a couple of more examples, because I think each of the examples are a little bit, you know, different. And this is an example, not building on and taking it another step or emphasizing different things, but where you really have the same answer to a very famous problem, but which highlights, in many respects, an exact opposite or diametrically opposite perspectives. And that, of course, is the example of shtaros, the problem of Nepiyim Velo Mipiksavim and shtar, where the Nesivas and Simin, and Reb Chaim, in his piece in Hilchos Eidos, propose the same solution for a very famous problem of the Rambam. Rambam says that, seems to say that all shtaros are drabanan. It can't be that all shtaros are drabanan because a get is a shtar, shtari kiddushin are daraisa, shtari shichur are daraisa. So, how do you solve that problem? And Sivas came up with an idea, Reb Chaim came up with the same idea, but again, the way that they're developed, in this case, not only shows different, like, nuances or emphases, but almost an exact opposite approach. I could take the same material, the same ram, the same phenomena, and just see it from two opposite perspectives. Again, in a very characteristic way. So maybe we'll continue with that one, and also I want to talk about Rubo Kikulo. That's another, I think, famous position that Reb Chaim developed. And again, where we also see parallels, to highlight a little bit further some of the other aspects. So we'll continue.